You're having a good morning so far. Praise God. Matt, are we recording this today? We are? Okay. It's really good to be able to share God's word. It is a real honor to do this. And, you know, living the dream. What more could you ask for in life than to just share God's word with people? It's fantastic, especially on Easter Sunday. And maybe we'll go for baptisms next Easter or something as well. That would be wonderful. So, welcome this morning. And for those who are listening through the various devices and through the internet, especially to those in Florida who listen in to what we're doing, and now some in Scotland, welcome and happy Easter to you. And happy Easter to you, NCC. It's great to see you. And good to have some friends with us today also. I want to talk a little bit this morning, guess what, about Easter. No, there won't be any Easter bunnies, or sadly, there won't be any donkeys. And that would break the heart of the school. Every assembly I do at the school has a donkey in the story. And they call me the donkey man. Kath will attest to this as it happened in Asda. Little boy ran over to greet the donkey man and introduced me to his mother as the donkey man. Not as good as when I did one assembly and I said, good morning, boys and girls. And they said, good morning, Mr. Rumble. Crushed I was. This is a day when we celebrate the resurrection of Jesus. We celebrate it every day, but on this particular day, we mark it out for special significance. It is the most significant event that's ever taken place in the history of the world. That's how special this is. It's an event, get this, that has given us the measurement of time as we understand it in our day and age, in our culture. How about that? 2014. Since what? Since Jesus arrived. It is a day when he conquered death. It is what our faith is based upon. It's a special day. And for some people, this is a message of salvation, especially to those who are lost and without hope in their life. To others, it's a message of hope when they've failed God in one way or another. To others, it's a message of restored faith when you feel like you've given up. To some people, it's a message of joy and peace, especially when you're sinking in self-pity and despair. And to others, it's a message of purpose and destiny when there's no direction in our life. It's a great day. And the disciples of Jesus, as we heard earlier, who'd been with him prior to his crucifixion, must have experienced all of these emotions. Maybe all at the same time. The world had ended. It was so confusing, so difficult. And you know, in 1 Corinthians 15 and 17, it tells us this. And if Christ has not been raised, then our preaching is useless, and so is your faith. If there is no resurrection, I'm wasting my time, and so are you. But the good news is it's true. In John 19, verse 30, Jesus, from the cross, utters three words that change everything. He said, it is finished. It is finished. He had emptied himself of all he came to do. Isn't that wonderful? It is finished. And the Greek word that's used is the word that is a cry of victory. So Jesus dies with a shout of triumph on his lips, with you and with me and with everyone firmly in his gaze. It is finished. I want to talk this morning, not for very long. Please don't applaud at that. Of four people. Four very regular people. Two Marys, they count as one. Two people on the road to Emmaus, that's our second lot. Number three, I want to talk about, well, you just wait and see. Okay? That's how much of a spoiler alert you get. We've got four short readings that's going to come to us this morning. So here's the first one. Yes.
Matthew 28:1-10. After the Sabbath, at dawn on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. There was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven and, going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes were white as snow. The guards were so afraid of him that they shook and became like dead men. The angel said to the women, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you are looking for Jesus who was crucified. He's not here. He has risen, just as he said. Come and see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples, 'He has risen from the dead, and he is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him. Now I have told you.'" So the women hurried away from the tomb, afraid yet filled with joy, and ran to tell his disciples. Suddenly, Jesus met them. "Greetings," he said. They came to him, clasped his feet, and worshipped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee, and there they will see me."
And in that story, and we've heard that passage so many times this morning, and that's great because that's what it's all about. This is the great discovery. This is the first of our four groups of people, the two Marys. We've heard how the purpose of the stone being rolled away is not to let Jesus out, but indeed to let Jesus in. And I've told you so many times of my journey when I was at the Garden Tomb in Jerusalem, and how the group I was with was the last party to get in. We had to wait for all these Catholic pilgrims. There were busloads of nuns and all sorts of people, and we were last, and it was going to close after we had finished, and you had to exit via the bookshop. These Christians have got it sewn up, haven't they? Very interesting. And so everyone's going into the tomb, Gordon's tomb. And I go in, and everyone had been coming out, and they were so excited about that. They clearly had some sort of spiritual moment. And I went in, and it was quite an amazing thing. And I came out, and I felt nothing. Nothing. And I was crushed. I was absolutely crushed. I felt there was something wrong with me. And then the man came to lock the tomb. Now, that I don't quite get, because there's nothing in there, and it's a cave, yet you lock it. And there's a door, and he closed the door. And on the outside of the door, there's a plaque. Has anyone ever seen this plaque? It says, "He is not here. He has risen." And wow, then I got it. And that was amazing to be encountered like that, with that great truth. That's what Easter is all about. That's what's happening to these Marys at this tomb. He's not there. They don't know where he is. The Bible gives, and through the different Gospels, it gives an amazing picture. In one gospel, it tells us the stone was rolled away. In another gospel, it tells us it was laid flat on the ground and an angel was sitting on it. Remarkable. And he's not there. Tells us in yet another gospel that the grave clothes were laid out and the headcloth neatly folded, the classic Jewish tradition of I haven't finished yet, I'm returning, what you would do in a restaurant. If you'd nipped out to the bathroom or something, you'd fold your napkin. And it tells the waiters, you're not done, you're coming back. And here is the face cloth of Jesus. And most of this is missed on us. He's coming back. But there are three imperatives. And if you look at the little help sheets I've given you, you'll be able to jot these things down as we go along this morning. Three imperatives that the angel speaks to the Marys. And the first one is this. They're urged to believe. Too many Christians feel the promises of God are just too true, or just too good to be true. And the only way to dispel doubt and hesitation is to take Jesus at his word. My dear friends, if you want to walk on water, say it with me, you got to get out of the boat. We have to take Jesus at his word. The second imperative that comes there is their urge to share. Go tell the others. See, after discovering the truth, our first duty is to share it with someone else. And the third imperative that they have is to rejoice. Literally, to do joy. So we need to believe, we need to share, and we need to be rejoicing. Because that's what this is all about. Contrast that with what had happened to Jesus. They used treachery to seize him. They used illegality to try him. They used slander to charge him. They used bribery to silence the truth about his resurrection. And today, they just can't leave his name alone. It is often a cuss word on the lips of people. Can't leave his name alone. The Romans had a saying, magna est veritas et prevalebit. And it means great is the truth, and it will prevail. And we need to remember that. Great is the truth, and it will prevail. That's our first group of people. Okay, they made a great discovery. The second is that they were looking in the wrong place. Let's hear our second reading. Why are you looking for the living amongst the dead? Looking in the wrong place. Luke 24, 5 to 7. That's a challenge. Why are you looking for the living amongst the dead? Is that how we're operating? Are we so religious that we're looking for Jesus amongst the trappings of death? Are we still facing the wrong way? People still look for Jesus amongst the dead. Was he a good man? Was he a good teacher? Was he just a role model? Is he some iconic religious character? Does your life lack a certain something? Probably because you're looking in the wrong place. So good was C.S. Lewis when he gives us the trilemma. And he explains it by saying a trilemma is one step worse than a dilemma. What is the trilemma? Well, it's simply this. Is Jesus a liar? Is he a lunatic? Or is he the Lord? That's the trilemma. We have to choose. If he was a liar, then he was the biggest fool that ever lived because it cost him his life. If he was a lunatic, then he had to be in the level of a man who identifies as a poached egg. Completely gone. But if he's the Lord, then that requires from us a response, my brothers and sisters. And now we come to the third of our folks. And it's another two people, and they're out for a walk. Let's hear our third reading. Thank you. Luke 24, 32 to 35. We call this the road to Emmaus. Two of the disciples of Jesus walking this journey. The sun is beginning to set in their eyes. They're traveling the journey. They're walking. They're talking about what has just happened. I wonder what we would say if Matt and I were on a journey just after these events in Jerusalem. What our conversation would be. It would probably be something around the, I just can't believe this. What's just happened? It would be in a conversation probably like that. And then Jesus comes, doesn't he? And he walks alongside them. They don't recognize him. It's a 7-mile journey. And all of a sudden, as the day is getting on, they invite him to spend some time with them, and they break bread together. They're already in the habit of doing that. And so must you. When you invite someone round to your home, break bread with them. That's biblical to do that. If you're interested in trivia, you might want to know that Cleopas, one of these two disciples, the other doesn't get named, but there is a tradition, and I say that again, a tradition, that he was the brother of Joseph, Jesus' stepfather. That is a tradition that's held by many. Very useful in a Trivial Pursuit quiz, but it's a tradition, okay? We don't know who Cleopas was. We don't know who the other disciple was. But they're walking there, and all of a sudden, their fears are gone. And they hightail it 7 miles back to Jerusalem to find the disciples and tell them what's just happened to them. And this is useful for us, because often we think, if I said to you, you know, come, Sharon, come tell me your testimony, you'd probably tell me how you became a believer, wouldn't you? That's what we're conditioned to do. But that's not your testimony. That's your birth story. Your testimony is what God's doing in your life every moment since then, and usually the latest thing. And so they would testify to what has just happened amongst the disciples. What a wonderful thing. Except the disciples were a bit, Now, the Christian message is never fully yours until you learn to share it with someone else. That's important. So the Marys, and then Mary herself, and then Cleopas and his chum on the road to Emmaus, encountering Jesus. And then the fourth and final of our folks this morning. Well, let's hear our last reading, please. Number four. So first of all, we have a great discovery. Secondly, we see people looking in the wrong place. Thirdly, the road to Emmaus story. And fourthly, we have the classic mistake that so many of us make when life gets a little bit squeezy and tough and bumpy. See, Thomas gets a bit of a bad press. Many people call him a doubting Thomas. The man went on to plant 1,100 churches in India. I could do with a bit of that doubt. He's heartbroken. He's confused. He's crushed. And anyone who's had a major moment in life where the rug has been pulled from under you will understand that emotion. It's hard to keep your balance. It's hard to see straight. That's what's happened to Thomas. This is not about someone doubting. This is about someone struggling to keep perspective of what's going on. And here comes the classic mistake. He withdraws from fellowship. He looks for isolation rather than family. And when Jesus appears, guess who's missing? Thomas. See, isolationism causes us to miss out on the life of Jesus, which flows from fellowship and relationship experiences. How many times when life gets bumpy do we see or do we feel ourselves that we're just going to pull back and we're not going to be involved? That is the classic mistake, and the devil loves it when we do that. He plays havoc with our emotions and our thinking. In a time of tragedy or pain or confusion, we need to reach out for fellowship to the church family. We need to be there for one another because that's where we're most likeliest to encounter Jesus face to face. Please don't make the classic mistake. But there are two great virtues in Thomas as we're coming to an end this morning. The first is this, and I admire this so much in him. He refuses to say that he understands what he doesn't understand. I think that's great, that level of honesty. He doesn't pretend he's got it. He's upfront about it. And secondly, he never attempts to silence doubts by pretending they don't exist. He's just trying to get his balance and make sense out of this thing that's happened. See, we need to walk the journey with Jesus. Thomas travels from honest doubt to absolute certainty, and so can you. He issues what could very well be the greatest of all the creeds that have been written. My Lord and my God. That's it. My Lord and my God. Wow. Can we say that? Can we genuinely believe that for ourselves? We might not see everything, we might not understand everything, but Jesus will reveal himself to you if you just don't make this classic mistake. How do we walk in this victory? This is the last thing we'll say today. And if you believe that, you'll believe anything. No, I'm only kidding. This is the last thing we'll say today. When we refuse to believe that God has forgotten us, even when every fiber in our being feels forsaken, we're walking in victory. When we never let go of our faith, even when it feels like it's all gone, we're walking in victory. And when we feel beaten to the very depths of our being, hold on tighter, because the morning is surely coming. I'll end with one final psalm. Morning lasts but for the night, but joy comes in the morning. And on Easter morning, boy, did joy come. The stone is rolled away. Christ has risen. You are set free. Go tell someone.